Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. And have we got a treat for you today? Jeanette, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for making time for us today.
You're welcome, Simon. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Could you introduce yourself to the listeners, please?
Sure. I'm Jeanette Yoff. I am a former foster youth adoptee from New York, now live in Los Angeles. I am a psychotherapist working in the field with children, families, teens, and adults connected by foster care and adoption. I also started a nonprofit in Los Angeles, a community center called Celia Center, which I named after my first mother, Celia. And we bring the whole constellation together in adoption. That's adoptees, adoptive parents, and birth parents. And we include foster parents, former foster youth. And we also educate the community, social workers, nurses, therapists, administrators in the field of child welfare. So we can all figure out what is best practice in foster care and adoption, because it's always evolving and it's changed so much in 20 years. I was just talking to a birth mother yesterday. Actually, you know, before Roe versus Wade, I mean, things were very different than they are today. Women aren't shunned and shamed today as they were back then. And open adoption is more prevalent today. I do a lot of reunion work for adult adoptees and open adoption work for children and their families. Yeah. And I do something else called open foster care, where children actually go back to previous foster homes, not to go live, but to see them again, because children form attachments to all their families. And I was one of them because I lived in foster care for 6.5 years in the New York State foster care system. And I still I'm still connected to my foster family. So they helped grow me up. So that's what I do. I do a lot of work in this field to make change and make a difference.
Fantastic. And what a wealth of experience you have. So I'm delighted to welcome you onto the show. So when we were talking last time, we talked about, you know, who we might do the episode, do the interview for. And you said, well, I've got five insights for adult adoptees. And we talked about that being the kind of the structure for our conversation today. So before we get into that, could I ask you a slightly different question?
Sure.
So how does your personal experience, how does that feed into the work that you do these days? How does that inform it?
My personal experience informs my work incredibly, incredibly. I do think a lot back to my own childhood and what I didn't get, my own unmet needs. And that's why I wrote a book called Groundbreaking Interventions, Working with Children in Foster Care and Teens in Foster Care and Adoption. And it's 30 interventions, psychotherapeutic interventions for families. And I really, in writing that book, I thought back, what did I need sitting in my foster placement or then being adopted? So I go back to my own childhood and look at the therapy pieces, the unmet mental health needs, and working with children and families and teens and adults. It's, you know, when you study to become a therapist, you learn how to manage your counter transference, which is the triggers you are going to, you learn how to manage your countertransference. Countertransference is an experience that a therapist will have being with a client who could be grieving, angry, and the client can start to feel and be triggered of their own unresolved mental health challenges or unresolved family attachment, or even attachment trauma. So you can get triggered just being with your client. Well, when I first started doing this work, I was triggered all over the place, because that's part of building that muscle. Now I've learned to manage, and I can sit with someone who's just grieving and grieving and grieving, because I have also grieved my losses. I'm not over all of them yet. We will never be fully healed, but I've learned to manage the feelings that come up for me when I do work with clients. And it actually, it's healing for me and the client when I'm able to tolerate the experience with them. It only makes me stronger and more capable and more available for the next client, because I've been through that experience. So I've been through some pretty challenging situations with adoptees, and the incredible emotional, powerful psychological life that we experience internally is intense. And when an adoptee feels safe enough to share and not run from themselves, it's really powerful to be able to, and empowering for me to be able to heal and help someone through some very, very difficult emotions, experiences, and help them feel a sense of relief. That is my goal as a psychotherapist, to help my clients feel a sense of relief and be able to integrate an authentic self, not a false self, and get through these schemas, which are belief systems that unfortunately we do integrate at young ages, especially when we've been separated from our birth families or foster families. We start to create new schemas that are not healthy for us. And that's believing that we're either unwanted, unlovable, or deficient. There's something wrong with us. And that schema can be very hard to shift and reintegrate into a feeling of you are good enough. You can feel good about yourself. You can raise your self-esteem. You can feel more confident. You can feel a greater sense of belonging on this planet. But it takes work. It takes the mental health commitment of finding an adoption competent therapist. And I'm going to repeat that. All adoptees, in my professional opinion, need to be working with an adoption competent therapist. And that's someone who understands grief and loss and can sit with you in your grief and loss and validate that for you as real and on help honor that experience for you. Understand trauma, that we have experienced a traumatic event that has had impact on us emotionally and psychologically, which will impact our future relationships of can I trust? And we can have anxiety and depression if we are not receiving mental health support. And we can get stuck in either anger or denial, which are both protective defense mechanisms in order to cope if we don't know any other way and we're not receiving support and resources. So today I'm going to share some mental health tips that I use with clients that you could use DIY at home and use for yourself.
Great. Wow, there's so much there. I think the main thing that that hit me was something that you said at the start of that answer, which was the kind of it's a cliche, isn't it? But the journeyness of this, and that's what you're talking about, is the journey, and continuing that journey. So we're all on a different path.
Yes. I mean, it's a process. It's a process. When I remember the first time I went into my primal wound. I don't know about you, Simon, but when I felt my primal wound, the abyss, have you read Nancy Barrier's Primal Wound?
I've got a very counter, it took me down It took me down, and then a few months later, I realized that actually it was becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy for me.
So you've rethought the primal wound. You've reframed it into something different.
I didn't rethink it. I didn't reframe it. I had an insight that the primal wound sounds like it's a thing, but actually it's feelings. And in my opinion, we can feel wounded, but who we are is unwoundable.
That core self you're speaking to. And then the experience creates personas around that core self or false selves in order to protect from feeling the pain and the grief and the loss of what happened to you.
I believe that what's wounded is our sense of self, but we are not our sense of self. We are our self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe in the authentic true self too. That's the core of who we are. And defense mechanisms are like onion shell personas around that core self that protect that core self. And those are experiences that we have. But I hear you. That's powerful.
So I've done a lot of work on myself. Uh-huh. I'd seen myself, okay, probably 3 or 4 years before I read The Primal Wound. So when it took me down, it didn't take me down far. And some months later, I actually felt, you mentioned that your goal is to help your clients feel relieved. And I felt a relief when I realized that my self wasn't wounded. My true self wasn't wounded because it is unwoundable. It feels painful, but we're talking here about feelings and we're not our feelings.
Yeah, that's interesting. I do an intervention called the Shame Witch, and it's actually the metaphor of a sandwich, because we have a real hard time as adoptees separating ourselves from our behaviors, ourselves and from our feelings, to have objectivity. And so the way it works is it's a sandwich. So the bread on the bottom is you point out all your positive, good strengths and vulnerabilities. You are a good person. You're doing the best that you can. This is hard. You're continuing the journey, the process. You'll get through this. Then the turkey, the lettuce, the pickle, and the tomato, that's where you put all the emphasis of what you're feeling, how difficult this is, how challenging this is. Yes, you're feeling anger. Yes, you're feeling upset. That's okay. And what are you going to do about that? And then the bread on top is you're a good person. You will get through this. You are good enough. You are worthy. Keep going. And I call it the shame witch because we tend to be very hard on ourselves and shame ourselves and think that we're deficient. Like you're saying, that core self, there's something all wrong about us, but that's not the case. We were perfectly good babies. We were born like all babies are born. And there's a lot of wonderful strengths, vulnerabilities in that core self and it's having objectivity to what you're experiencing so you can make changes, have an awareness is how we make change of what's happening, have empathy and compassion for that, and then utilize your coping skills to move through it. So you can integrate a healthy, authentic, integrated self that can feel emotions, think about emotions, move through emotions and experiences.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, relates to what you're saying. You know, it's separating out who you are. You are already good enough. This stuff, kind of like maggots, you know, the things that stick to you and stay with you, are what you're learning how to peel off layer by layer and look at them. Have compassion and choose to let go, accept certain pieces. You never forget that you can forgive a little bit, a little dose at a time. To again, give yourself a sense of relief and stop wounding yourself over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But we feel rejected. We feel rejected, which is valid. It's valid to feel that way. But you don't need to continue to reject yourself in the process and victimize yourself by finding partners who reject you. And if that's happening over and over and over, then something is being reenacted in the present to resolve something in the past. So you want to go talk to someone about that.
Yeah.
And explore it and take ownership.
One of the things that really helped me, because I had done all my work in this area, well, done most of my work in this area in groups, but I haven't done it work with not adopted people, right? And what became very clear to me with some on courses I was on was that non-adopted people don't think they're good enough either. It seems to be the central issue of all human beings, that we think that we're not good enough. It just so happens that adoptees, we've got a very compelling reason to believe that human, pretty pervasive human belief. We've got a good, we could stand up in court and, you know, we could really advocate for the fact that we're not good enough because we were relinquished. And that seems to me to be the difference that makes the difference in the adoptee world, is that we've got a really good case for not feeling good enough.
Yes, we do. And a big and, I use and a lot. It wasn't about us that our birth parents could not keep us. It's getting the story straight so we can again do the shame, which again, separate out, wasn't about you. It was about the lettuce, the pickle, the tomato, about the circumstances in their life that they couldn't parent any baby born on your birthday for whatever that reason is. They weren't supported by their family. They were too young and didn't feel capable, didn't have the resources, didn't have a partner, didn't have money, didn't have a safe place to live. There's so many circumstances.
Yeah.
And society did not provide resources for her as well to be able to parent. So,
yeah, and as you say, and just because it's a compelling reason doesn't mean it's true. But this is a belief that that I hung on to. I mean, a lot of my not good enough belief. If not good enough is an ice cream, I had two flavors. I had the business flavor, and I had the and I had probably about four scoops of that, right? But I also I had the adoption flavor, which I probably just had half a scoop of that, right? Mm. But I can see the difference between, because I've had two flavors of not good enough. I can compare and contrast them, right? So, so yeah, it was the not good enough ice cream was, you know, was the number one thing on my menu.
Mm, interesting. Yeah.
I've never had that. I've never come up with the scoops metaphor before that, but you know, but yeah, but just because we don't need to, we don't need to eat that. We can change the menu. We change the menu, but we change the menu. I think you were alluding to insight earlier on. Change happens by seeing something new. I'm not quite sure exactly. I can't remember exactly what you said, but for me, change comes from insight. But we live in
awareness.
Awareness or, you know, awareness, insight, that I think kind of the same words. And I think we're coming from, there might be different words with usually different meanings, but I think we're coming from the same place. But we live in a world that is quite focused in on strategies rather than insight.
Rather than
awareness. It's about awareness changes. Awareness changes as more. Awareness is the catalyst for change.
Yes, it is.
In my opinion, but we think it's about the strategies rather than about the awareness shift.
Right.
Because awareness is, you know, awareness happens in a black box somewhere. It's kind of mystical. We hang out at the bus stop for insights and for awareness shifts, or we go to see a therapist to shift our awareness. But it's kind of tricky to get our head around it because it is a change in what's going on for us. So we're drawn to the compelling logic of strategies rather than the, because it seems really concrete. I see a lot of this in self-help articles in the paper. This is nothing adoption related, but you know, like all these, you know, self-help articles in the newspapers, they all seem like they're really good strategies, but they have no kind of oomph behind them. And if they did, if self-help strategies in newspapers and web pages, if it did work, then we wouldn't have like the childhood obesity issue that we have. You know, we wouldn't have the smoking. You wouldn't have the smoking and alcohol problems. All these things where people think it's about strategy when it's really about a shift in our awareness. So the Thriving Adoptees podcast is all about trying to catalyze shifts in people's awareness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And get them to go inside. Stop focusing outside. Go inside and listen. Take the time. I like to say, find a still, quiet place inside of you and take the time to just sit and be with yourself. We're so good at avoiding and running away, and that's where we don't gain awareness. But slow down. And if you could take 5 minutes a day to just listen, because we have an inner world and there's an inner voice in there. And I listened to a CD many years ago called The Power of Your Spoken Word. And what I loved about this CD was she helped you slow down and hear yourself, what you say about yourself to others and what you say to yourself inside. And just slowing down and having that awareness will help you gain perspective and understanding. Oh, I actually am really hard on myself. I'm constantly telling myself to shut up. You're not good enough. And then you can begin to understand why maybe you're not feeling very confident. Your self-esteem is compromised because you're talking to yourself this way, because you actually believe this about yourself. And yes, like you're saying, Simon, you can shift that belief. There's an and equation in there, and that's part of the first tip that I have. You want me to get into that?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so I love the phrase, the Buddhist phrase, that what causes suffering is our attachment to suffering. Think about that. Some of us are just attached to suffering, just part of thriving for that person, but it doesn't help you thrive. Being attached to suffering is only going to cause you more despair. So it's changing the way you look at things, because the mind, you must understand the mind, you cannot control it. The mind has its own pace and it's highly suggestive. So if I were to say to you right now, don't think about a white bear, go. You're going to be thinking about a white bear and you're going to tell yourself, don't think about that white bear, but you're actually thinking about that white bear. What we want to do is understand this fact, and that you don't have to believe everything you think about yourself. When I learned this, and this is mindfulness, I said, wow, I don't have to believe all these thoughts that my mind is telling me. I can change them. So from I am not good enough, that was a schema, a belief system for me for many, many years. I still have a little part of myself that goes, are you good enough? And then I go, and you're doing the best that you can. And you're going to trust that the words will come to you when you need them. You're going to trust yourself. You're working on yourself. You're figuring this out. And I'm congratulating you for even taking this step. I'm proud of you. It's you saying this to you, yes, internally, and being your own best friend. So understanding this piece, that you can't control the mind. Yeah, thoughts are going to come in. And then you go, your and. You can say three encouraging, supportive, best friend voice phrases to yourself to help shift, like Simon's saying, from the wounded child to the expanded child, to the wise child, to the discovering child, to the exploration, being open to exploring again and not getting stuck in this place of suffering. And Jung, I'm really a big fan of Jung's work. He says, the most terrifying thing is to accept oneself completely. It's not easy, this work, to be able to sit with yourself, especially if you've been running for so long. It can feel scary and overwhelming, but yet necessary. So it's learning to accept you have these parts, and you may have these negative beliefs about yourself, but you can shift them. You can shift them. You can write what you're thinking and you can shift them. So five phrases that I like that I wanted to share. Number one, you are not born to suffer. You are not born to suffer. Number two, what happened to you is not your fault. You are not to blame. Number three, forgive yourself for compromising and abandoning yourself to be loved. Think about that. We victimize ourselves. If we don't feel like we're good enough, we're not going to feel good enough or worthy for love. Forgive yourself for compromising and abandoning yourself to be loved. Four, you were loved, you are loved, and you continue to be loved. We don't think about this. We look back and we go, oh, we weren't loved. You were loved. You were cared for. Number five, you are not a child anymore. We will not allow your past to punish and make you feel less than any longer. Number six, you are willing to master loving yourself unconditionally. You are willing to master loving yourself unconditionally. You make this commitment and this conviction with yourself.
Don't we identify with the voice in our head and see the voice in our head as us? Don't a lot of us do that?
Yes. And I talk in you messages. I is ego. And our ego can tell us other things. Our ego actually can try to protect ourselves from being vulnerable. It wants to protect us. It doesn't want us to be vulnerable. So yeah, there are inner voice. There's a voice in there. But what I'm teaching is to create an and new voice that can become stronger than the voice that's telling you to suffer, to be unlovable, to stay rejected, stay depressed, stay anxious.
But the voice in our head isn't who we are, huh?
It's consciousness, and it's based on our experiences, that voice that talks to us. It's a consciousness. So when you say, is it who we are? I do feel it's a part of you.
Have you heard of a guy called Rupert Spira? You've heard of him?
I think you mentioned him to me last
time. You mentioned that time, yeah.
What does he say?
So he uses a metaphor of a movie and a screen. So he uses the screen as the metaphor for consciousness and awareness. And the simplest way he describes this is that this is the context. And the movie is the content. So the content includes our feelings, for example. So the movie is compelling, dramatic, a roller coaster of emotions. And it draws our attention. And in that, in where our attention is focused, we lose sight of the screen, which is the context of our within which our feelings arise.
Yeah, that sounds like a mindfulness. They say be a witness to your mind. So your body is separate. And in your mind, you see a film script of all your experiences, all your thoughts, all your feelings, and you're a witness. So you're separating your body from your mind. So you can just be with, because we can't control it. We can manage the body, the physical self. It's really also, when I say find a sense of belief, it's finding that in your body. Slowing down. And yes, being a witness to all of these experiences you're having.
Yeah.
I like that metaphor a lot because it does help you have what's called objectivity, which is brings you to awareness.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that it is, again, sitting with yourself and seeing if you can see the script, the film going by in your mind. what is it that's happening inside of you? And it takes strength. It takes finding someone that you feel emotionally safe with to explore your mind.
Yeah.
That story. And I know how hard it is to reach out for help. And I always say, you're worth it. You're worth it. Do it. It will help you be a better person, to not only to yourself, but the people around you. You'll have more compassion. You'll feel a greater sense of belonging to yourself.
Yeah.
I've been in a lot of therapy myself, and I'm a therapist. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm not ashamed to say that. I'm proud to say that. I've sat for hours because so much had happened to me, and I did not have the resources to support at that time. And I didn't have the capacity mentally also to do the work then. It's hard to do this work as a child, really hard. But the kids I work with now, I'm very direct with kids. And I go, we're going to talk about this part of you that's really angry. And we go right in. So number two. So that was just number one. Like, just understand your mind. See if you can see what you're telling yourself and see if you can create a new script. So number two is, if you're grieving, and most of us are, the loss of what? Our ancestry, our birth family, our ethnic, cultural, racial history. Honor your grief. And when I brought up the primal wound before, I brought up the biggest word for me out of that book was the feeling of feeling like it's an abyss. And when I really started going into my grief and stopped running from it, it felt like it had no floor to it. I felt like I was going to be suffocated like in a Milky Way and I wouldn't be able to get out. But I began to feel my grief and I began to release it. And that's a physical embodiment of releasing grief. Grief tears are much different than regular tears. Grief tears are salty. They're deep. They're coming out from your cells. So grieving is actually part of this healing process. Cry, make space for crying. When we cry, they've scientifically discovered that you're actually releasing cortisol in a tear. Those are stress hormones that our bodies retain. We need to release them from our bodies. We can't have pent up tons of cortisol. It doesn't allow us to find a sense of relief. It actually keeps us in a high stress state. And then when we try to regulate ourselves, we're actually at a higher barometer of stress. And that becomes our new normal, our homeostasis. So we want to release this from the body. So allow yourself to cry. And I say, when you don't release it, it will incubate in there. So what we resist persists. And, you know, your heart may race. Even talking about this, my heart's, it's intense. But when you go in there, and you give it a floor. And I recently did a class called Journey to Your Primal Wound. And we took a little, it's an imagination visualization journey. And I actually created the primal wound as a big structure in the ground that you get to go into. And you decide how you're going to get in there. Elevator, escalator, rope, stairs. You're going to have a headlamp on. You're going to have a backpack with all the things you need. And we're going to go in that primal wound. And we're going to redecorate. And we're going to go into three chambers that have three tasks for you to do to help you manage, explore it, stop running away, find a still quiet place in there, and have some landing. So it doesn't feel like an abyss anymore, that it feels tolerable, explorable and reconcilable. So I actually created a whole workbook. I did this last month for National Adoption Awareness Month. And if anyone's interested, just go to my website, JeanetteYoff.com, and you can get more information about that. If you want to take this visualization, I recorded it, and you can take the journey in your own space and time.
Cool.
And I call it the primal wound because for me, that was what the grief felt like. It was really grief. And I really learned to just go, oh, I can go in there and just sit there sometimes and cry and feel compassion for myself. I was a kid who cried a lot. My parent would say, my mom said, stop feeling sorry for yourself. And it wasn't until I became an adult when I said, my mom would always say to me, stop feeling sorry for yourself. But what I really needed her to say was, I'm sorry you're feeling so sorry for yourself. You've had a lot to feel sorry for. And then I learned in that moment that I needed to reparent myself. Say, Jeanette, it's okay to feel sorry for yourself. That's your grief. You've had a lot to feel sorry for. And just saying that to yourself will allow your grief to slowly come out. Really, really important. And it'll help you feel stronger inside. You'll actually feel relieved after you cry and not ashamed. There's no shame in mourning. We are mourning something. Something? Many things. Then you choose what it is that you're mourning for. I've cried buckets, I always say, and I'm a stronger person because of that. Because of that. And I've sat with many adoptees in mourning. Late discovery adoptees who were just finding out they were adopted at the age of 60. And then going back in their whole history and going, wow, now I understand myself better. Because I had a missing part. I always felt like something was missing. So grief, grieving, mourning is very important. And it's a process and it's not going to last forever.
Keep going.
Okay.
I'm just drawn in, you know, so.
Okay, great. So something that I did, we did a mental health class, an adult adoptee mental health class, me and Hillary Wilson, another psychotherapist who's an adoptee, and she's been a therapist for years, longer than I have. I've been a therapist since 2006, but I was doing volunteer work. But one of the things that we chose to do in that class was holding your baby self. So it's an exercise. And I want you to take a moment and breathe. Just take in a deep breath. You're going to do this exercise with me now. Bring the breath down to your belly and then release it. I like to say as an ocean breath. When you release, I want you to elongate the breath. That's actually going to help slow down your nervous system and allow you to settle in your body. So you take in a deep breath and focus more on releasing it. And release, 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 release until you have tension in your belly. Because that's actually going to force you to take in another deep breath. You're going to release more. So just imagine yourself right here, right now. I want you to put your arms together like you're cradling a baby. A baby. And I want you to imagine that you're holding your baby self. Your baby self. I want you to just take a look. And some of us don't have baby photos. Go back to the photo that you do know, that's you. Imagine yourself holding yourself. And just holding yourself, you can start to have emotion and feeling. Just knowing that you're nurturing and holding yourself can bring on emotion, and that's okay. See if you can look at yourself in your mind's eye. See if there's something that your baby needs from you right here, right now. Does he need to be held tighter, rocked, swayed? She or he need a blanket? Do they need someone to say something to them? So saying something to your baby self is very empowering in this exercise, and it's different for everyone. What does your baby need to hear from you? You're lovable. I'm not abandoning you anymore. I'm holding on to you now. I recognize you. I'm validating you. I'm acknowledging you exist. And I'm going to help you through this. Really powerful exercise. Just sit with yourself. And have this journey within yourself. When I've done this with many adoptees, they become emotional. They weep. Some are shocked at how they feel. Some gain that awareness. Wow, I have been hurting myself for so long. And that, I think, for us in our conversation, Simon, that's the authentic self right there, right? The beauty, the innocence, the pure love is in your arms. And that's you. And it's corny when we say, oh, love yourself. Well, this is an exercise in validating yourself, honoring yourself, being with yourself. Because this baby self is what we feel has been insulted because it was rejected and abandoned and surrendered and relinquished, whatever the word is, by our mother, this body. So we adopt ourselves, we reclaim ourselves, and we develop from there. So that's an exercise that I do for adoptees, and it's quite powerful, and it's a nice way to have gain compassion for yourself and what you've been through. So, yeah. And sometimes I'll be in a certain place or situation, and I just imagine myself holding my baby self, and I'm fine. I just go, oh, she's just a little upset right now. I'm going to rock her a little bit. I've had adoptees say, she's completely crying, and I don't know how to soothe her. I go, there we go. We're going to learn how to do that. She's really upset. He's really colicky. He's been crying for a long time. He's been abandoned too long. So yeah, that's the self. That's the core. And that's where our energy, our life force is. It's our life that you're holding in your own hands, really, the metaphor. So number three is, I recently made a video because I have a YouTube channel called Genetically Speaking about foster care, adoption, and mental health. Because every time I heard the word genetics, I went, whoa, that's like kind of like my name. So I said, I'm going to genetically speak about stuff. So I recently did a video on genetic mirroring. Genetic mirroring. We as adoptees, because we're displaced and placed in another home with different ethnicity, culture, racials, there's differences. There's transracial adoption, there's transcultural adoption. We do not look like our families. and we're not getting that mirroring. And it's through mirroring that we learn who we are. And the traits, the littlest of traits. When I met my birth mother, she would do this thing with her mouth, like this. Yeah, she would chew on her little lip right there. And I said, I looked at her, I said, I do that. These little genetic traits. And it helped me inform, oh, that's what it is. It's genetic. These traits get passed on. So we need to be with our tribe. So if you have not had reunion and you've done your DNA test and you have some understanding of your ethnic cultural roots, like I was saying earlier before we started, I realized I have roots, my ancestry DNA, in Lithuania. Well, I recently found a Lithuanian festival here in Los Angeles, and I went and I loved it. And I felt I was connecting to my people. And I ate the food, I listened to the music, I immersed myself, because it really helps us feel, it's so important to us, a greater sense of belonging. We are connected. We weren't just dropped by a stork. We are part of this world. And so finding that genetic mirroring, a dose at a time. I also am Argentinian. My mother is native Argentinian. I've been to Argentina, that's where I met her and had reunion. And just being there, wow, I saw myself all over the place. And I felt a sense of relief. It helps us psychologically and emotionally to be around people who give us a sense of who we are. And that genetic reflection. So I highly encourage you to find out more of who you are genetically, and go get that dose. And I highly encourage you to watch that video, because it's pretty powerful. One of the adoptees that I work with said, I shared it with my birth mother and she cried, because she didn't realize the lack of genetic mirroring that I had growing up. And he only got to know her as an adult, but all the missing pieces that he had to struggle with in figuring out who he was, had he known his mother in an open adoption, he would not be lacking these genetic markers. And that's why open adoption is incredibly important, because it actually, the research shows that children who are in open adoptions have less mental health challenges than children who are not. They have higher self-esteem, higher confidence, and they have a better understanding of their identity, and they're able to take more risks in the world because they feel more secure within themselves. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, totally.
They have a springboard. Oh, that's my birth mother, and this is my family that takes care of me. Oh, they're not confused either. The misperception is children are going to be confused. No, they're not. They understand, because there's a good reason why their mother is not parenting them. And they understand who their parents are. And their mother is still significant. I talked with a 14-year-old yesterday. It's his birthday on Friday. I said, oh, what are you doing for your birthday? He says, oh, my birth mother's going to call me. We're going to talk, you know. He knows who she is. He's confident. He knows she's going to call. I mean, I never had my birth mother call me on my birthday. That's a loss for us, you know? But kids today are receiving the genetic mirroring that we didn't get as adults. And, you know, this podcast is for adult adoptees, right? So I'm 50. We come from an era where this was not acknowledged for us, but you can reparent yourself now. You can reparent. That's what I call it. Reparent your mind, reparent your body, reparent these belief schemas. reparent that part of yourself and get your needs met now. Again, you were not born to suffer. Release. I used to imagine that I'd wear this cloak of despair all the time. And I remember the day I said, I'm taking this off. I'm done. I cannot live like this anymore. And it was a metaphor. It was just in my mind that I was wearing this cloak of victim, despair, shame. I said, I'm taking this off. I've been wearing this identity for too long. Let this go. And it was scary, but I feel stronger today, even than 5 years ago. I feel so much stronger today because I'm really able to, and the next part is stop blaming and shaming myself and saying you have issues. I hate that. It's you have strengths and vulnerabilities. You have strengths and you have vulnerabilities. And there's a phrase, seven core issues in adoption, which I don't like. I say there's seven core vulnerabilities in adoption. And then I said, I'm going to write the seven core strengths of adoptees. I'm going to read them now. We're compassionate. We're highly intuitive. We're adaptable. We're creative. We're brave. We're wounded healers. We're strong-willed. And we're unrelenting when driven. Unrelenting when driven. And I've shared that with a lot of adoptees. And you can create your own seven strengths for you. Because it's lifting yourself up. How are you lifting yourself up? Because the word depression is a spiraling down. We can spiral. It's easy for us to do that. It's what are you doing to spiral yourself back up and standing up on your own two feet? And you can do this. And it takes strength, perseverance, and never giving up, which is a big core belief system that I have ingrained in myself. Don't give up on yourself. You're worth it. And then do you edit this? I wasn't sure.
No.
Oh, okay. Because I only have like five more minutes because I have to talk to one of my therapists.
Sure.
But the last tip was learn bilateral stimulation. And I could leave you with how you do this. It's called tapping in. And it actually balances the body and the brain. Bilateral stimulation is tapping, alternating either your shoulders, crossing your arms and tapping, or tapping on your either knee back and forth. And bilateral stimulation activates each hemisphere in the brain in an alternating pattern, which inhibits the amygdala, which is the fight, flight, freeze response. It's really powerful. So I use it a lot in my practice, and it's so easy. You could just put your hands on your knees, on either knee. And when I say tap, you'll tap. So just a little imagination exercise. It'll take 3 minutes. Just want you to imagine your body right here, right now, in a peaceful place. A peaceful place that you can imagine. Your imagination is your greatest resource and tool. So right here, right now, put your body in a peaceful place that gives you a sense of peace. See your body there. It can be on this planet, it can be on another planet, be in space. It can be where you are right now. And in your mind's eye, I just want you to look around your peaceful place, see what you have around you. I want you to listen. What do you hear in your peaceful place? What sounds? And take in a deep breath. What does your peaceful place smell like? And what does the climate feel like in your peaceful place? Is it just right? Is there warmth? Is there a breeze? Whatever you need to bring this peaceful place to you. Now we're going to tap this in. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Usually when people do this, they feel more calm. Their inner world is slowing down. Their mind is slowing down. You're settled more in your body. It's a little practice. And you do it before you anticipate you're going to be in a stressful situation. So you're doing preventative medicine.
Wow.
So if you want to learn more about tapping in, there is a CD. It's called Tapping In by Laurel Parnell. And she has so many other things you can tap in, like a nurturing, loving figure, a protective figure, a wise figure. It's really powerful stuff. So,
thank you so much. Thank you so much. So, we'll put show notes for listeners. There's going to be links to Jeanette's website and Genetically Speaking, the YouTube channel as well. Check them out and connect with Jeanette on social. Thank you so much for sharing such great tips, Jeanette.
You're welcome, Simon. Great podcast you have. You know, thriving is where we want to be. It truly is.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you, listeners.